Welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Marketing and business building expert Jim Palmer, known internationally as the Newsletter Guru, is a serial entrepreneur, author, speaker, and coach to other entrepreneurs. Jim is the host of Newsletter Guru TV, a weekly web TV show featuring Jim's unique brand of smart marketing and business building advice. Check it out today at www.newsletterguru.tv. Please welcome your host of Stick Like Glue Radio, Jim Palmer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. I'm your host, Jim Palmer, and I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. We have had some outstanding interviews these past few weeks, and on this week's show, we're once again raising the bar even higher. This week, we're going to be talking about protecting your intellectual property with my good friend and special guest, trademark attorney Renee Duff. Renee is an attorney who has spent almost 20 years managing intellectual property assets from business, law firm, and in-house representatives. She has a unique combination of experience and insight that makes her a great resource on issues related to both commercial and legal sides of intellectual property. She's also an entrepreneur, and she brings that unique understanding and spirit to the people she represents. She is also my trademark attorney and one heck of a smart woman. So let's get right to my interview with Renee Duff.
So everyone, the topic of tonight's monthly call is intellectual property and what you need to know to protect yourself and your business. And I have to tell you, I kind of thought what I needed to do when I called Renee, but I'm someone that likes to hire out experts whenever possible. I mean, there's certain things I just think it's wise to get experts and good counsel. And so this is one area that I wanted to do. I was so impressed because she started asking me questions that I had no idea even needed to be asked. So I just trust her, what she's doing for my business. So, Renee, just by way of background, can you tell us, I've used the term intellectual property probably a dozen times already. Can you tell us what is intellectual property?
Sure. And it's, you know, that is a term that everybody hears thrown around these days because it is such a hot topic, but people don't necessarily know what it actually entails. So intellectual property, the main aspects of it are trademarks, copyrights, patents, and to a lesser extent that people know of, trade secrets. So each one has its own set of laws and its own way that it has to be handled, but they all fall under the umbrella of intellectual property. So you can use that term if you if you don't know what you're, which one you're actually talking about.
Okay, so it's actually that's kind of probably the umbrella term, if you will. That's the big catch-all phrase, but there's certainly different forms of intellectual property. I guess it's fair to say it's anything that you've either created or even processes. So I guess you're mentioning trade secrets and things like that. That's kind of like the biggest, broadest term for what you do?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, maybe what we ought to do first of all is if you can define and maybe explain some of the differences between all of those things, and why don't we take trademarks first? I think that's probably a common one.
Yeah, trademarks are the area that I've spent most of my career working with, and I think are almost in this day and age the most, and I say this, this is my own opinion, but I think it's one of the most important aspects of intellectual property, because your trademark is your brand. And as you all well know, your brand and people being able to find you and knowing what they get once they get there is very important in, you know, today's very competitive markets for everything out there. So by protecting your brand name or your trademark name, that way what a trademark is, it's a source indicator. And so it means that, you know, as the usual example that's given is if you go into McDonald's, you know what you're getting. Those fries are going to be the same whether they're in New York or Singapore. You're going to get the same thing. So you know as soon as you walk into McDonald's, that's what you're getting. So if you're creating products under a particular brand name, then what happens is people come to expect a certain amount, you know, a certain degree of quality and a certain type of writing and a certain type of of specificity in that area that, you know, it falls under that brand. So, you know, a lot of times the trademark is very important too, because, you know, a lot, you know, there's a lot of people out there who do the same things. And how do you differentiate yourself, and how do you get people to want to buy your product as opposed to somebody else's product? And while, you know, you can't stop competition, the best way for you to actually have people come looking for you is by building a strong brand. So that's why people go out and, you know, look for a Gucci bag as opposed to, you know, just some generic bag. They know what they're looking for. So a bag is a bag, but, you know, your bag is better because it's your bag. Hmm. If that makes
sense. So it does make sense. So Renee, so there's business names. You know, we're working on No Hassle Newsletters, the Newsletter Guru. Are there domain names and other types of names? Do they all fall under trademark protection?
Domain names can. Domain names are interesting because, you know, that's the newest area of intellectual property law, and it's interesting because the law is trying to, or tries to, fit the new areas into already existing areas. So the thing that's great about owning a trademark is that if there is a domain name out there that also uses that same trademark, you have the right to try, you know, to turn around and say to somebody that you can't use that because you have the rights in that trademark. So while a domain name doesn't necessarily give you rights in a trademark, if you have a trademark, it may help you actually acquire a domain name that you want, that somebody else is, you know, is either cyber squatting on or just kind of, you know, it's out there and you have some rights to go after that domain name.
Well, that's interesting. So if you've trademarked a name and then somebody already in advance of your doing that has registered with GoDaddy or whoever a certain domain name, you actually have some rights to acquire that from them?
Depending on the circumstances of what they're doing with that domain name, yeah. So, you know, everything is, you know, and again, I guess there's the disclaimer to all of this conversation is that everything in the law is very case specific, but it is something to consider if, you know, there is a particular domain name that somebody, a lot of times what happens with some larger brands is that, you know, there's so many different domain extensions at this point. Sometimes it doesn't make sense economically to register them all, but people will go out, and a lot of times if you don't want to be associated with some of the advertising that's going on those sites, which is, you know, sometimes it will be, you know, adult sites and things like that that you may not want to be associated with, then you have a very good case to try to have that domain transferred over to you if that domain name is using your brand name and disparaging it by associating it with content that you don't want to be associated with.
Hmm. And this may be a question that is not a good answer, but I suppose is there a fair market value? I mean, is it kind of like eminent domain? Can you, if you have a right to have it, do they get to say what they would have to sell it for, or how does that work?
No. The interesting thing is, and this is again why it's very case specific, because certain registrars have policies in place that you can actually take up your issue directly with the registrar. Not all of them have that, but there is a governing body that will you can file a dispute with. And so then the only problem there is that filing a dispute just in and of itself is expensive. You're looking at least $1,500 for the arbitrators, for the panel of arbitrators that are going to look over the case. But, you know, and that's why a lot of times if you go to the other side, they know that it's going to cost you that much. So they may come in just under that. But, you know, if you have to go that route, you know, that you can look at spending that kind of money in order to get it back. But it doesn't always have to be that way. There's some workarounds sometimes, and you get lucky every once in a while.
Well, that's why I guess you hear about these people that just go out and register hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of domain names. Eventually somebody's going to want it or need it, or there's a variation, I guess, that's going to have some value.
Exactly. And, you know, it really, like I say, it can keep an intellectual property attorney busy, you know, full time, trying to keep track of some of this stuff for some of the major brands. And it does. So.
Well, let me just ask you this, just out of curiosity, it's kind of off topic a little bit, but is there a, like you mentioned, governing body? I'm thinking the internet is still very new and it changes and it's so fast. Is there like a central? I mean, there's no governing body like in Congress or the government, or like who would oversee a dispute like that?
Well, it's ICANN, the international. What does that stand for? International. I'm totally blanking, but ICANN is the governing body for all of the internet related. They're the ones who set up any new domains that come out, and through them, there is a universal terms of service and a universal dispute policy that anybody who registers domains, you know, so like the GoDaddies and anybody else out there, if you read, you know, and you'll notice, like, when you register a domain name, there's a box you have to check that says, I agree to these terms and conditions, and nobody ever reads them. But what those terms are saying is that you're not registering a domain name that, you know, infringes on somebody else's intellectual property. And by virtue of that, if you have actually infringed on somebody else's intellectual property, you can go back and, using what they call a universal domain name dispute policy, or the UDRP, that can then help you get that domain name back. So you have to be careful what you're clicking on, because you never know what you're actually agreeing to. But that's what you're agreeing to, is that you will be governed by this.
Well, that's very interesting, because I'm guilty, as I'm sure 99% of the people who click those boxes. I don't exactly open it up and read it the whole 2 hours worth of small print, but I guess that's what's in there, which is pretty good to know. That's pretty good to know, actually. So I want to ask you about, like, copyrights, patents, et cetera, but sticking on the trademark thing, is this the area where there's, for instance, there's different symbols, like a trademark symbol or registration R and thing in a service mark, are those all, again, the umbrella under, are those trademark symbols? Each one is different, but they fall under the trademark kind of umbrella, if you will?
Yeah. You know what? So trademarks is sort of the catch-all that everybody just refers to when you're talking about a brand. You know, and again, you just have to remember that a trademark indicates a source. So whether it's the trademarks, and we had had this discussion, I think, when I was talking to you about registering your marks, trademarks are divided into classes of goods and services. So there's 34 classes of goods and 10 classes of services. And so a trademark, you generally refer to a trademark for the goods, and you refer to a service mark for anything that is a service. So you use the TM for goods and the SM when you see that for services. And the circle R basically means that the mark has been registered with the trademark office. So you've gone through the whole process and you have all of the rights that go with the actual registration with the trademark office. What you have to remember, or a good thing to know that a lot of people don't know, is that the TM can be used by anyone who's claiming a mark as their own to indicate their goods or their services. So you can use the TM and the SM without actually registering. Doesn't mean that just by, you know, it doesn't mean that there might not be problems with you doing that, but if you, you know, if you're going to claim that, and that's, you're going to eventually go forth and maybe do a search and try to register that name, that helps also, because trademark rights are based on use. So the longer you use the mark, the further back your rights go, whether you've registered it or not.
So that's a little like people throwing the sign in their front yard that says protected by, whether or not they actually have the alarm company.
Exactly.
If you're throwing up the trademark symbol, and people are, you know, most people would probably back off at that point. So if I understand what you said, you put up the TM or the SM, the TM for the classifications of selling goods, and the service mark if you are providing services. And then when you go through the whole process through the federal government, when that's completed, does that then switch to an R, or do you still keep the TM?
No, that's when you get to switch to the circle R. And you know, at that point, you know, so when you see anything with the circle R, you know that they have, you know, some significant rights in that mark. The TM may or may not, you know, some people just never actually bother to go through the process, but and they continue using the TM, and that doesn't mean that they don't have rights in the mark because, as I said, trademark rights are based on use, and there are rights called common law rights that you can have in trademarks. But if you ever have an issue where you want to or need to stop somebody from using your mark, having the federal registration gives you so many more advantages that it makes so much sense if that's your brand and that's your business to just go through the process and have that. It's sort of an insurance policy.
Okay. Well, I think that's pretty clear. And my measure is if I can understand that, I'm thinking most people are. So let me move on past this one now. Let me ask you about copyrights. Is that mostly for, you know, writing your articles, writing a book, things like that?
Absolutely. Copyright pertains to anything that you can fix in a tangible medium is the legal language. So, and of course that, you know, in the days when the terms were originally written, the only things you could really affix to was paper or maybe, film, but now it extends out to, anything you type on your computer that, because, you know, there is a copy being made in your computer hard drive. So even though it's not something that you can touch, it's still there and covered as a copyright. So copyrights, you think of copyrights as any designs, any writing that you do. If you're an artist, copyright is a very big, big area for you to consider because that's where your protections all come in for your paintings, for any sculptures, for any photography. You know, anything along those lines, jewelry can be copywritten. You know, there's various things that all go into that. But the copyright, what your copyright does is it basically provides you with this bundle of rights that you then have the ability to either give out or not give out. So that's why when, you know, copyright infringement comes up, it's that somebody has done something that they shouldn't be, you know, that they're not allowed to do because your right is basically to allow people to either distribute it or not. So, you know, at that point, copyright attaches literally as soon as it is fixed in a tangible medium. So the law changed so that you don't have to actually use the copyright symbol in order to show ownership of the copyright, but it's always a really good idea because that way, again, it's sort of the same thing as you were saying with the alarm protection company. It's just, you know, when you see it, it's like, oh, okay, it's already copywritten, and you know, I shouldn't go there and try and copy this. But similar
well, that's
to
interesting. So excuse me for interrupting, but when you write something, like let's say a lot of people on the call, they do blogging, and is even a blog post, which may be, you know, a couple hundred words, or article marketing, things like that, those are all things that, if I understand what you said, as soon as you print it, put it on paper, post it to your blog, or submit it to an article directory, that is copyright protected, you're saying. There's nothing else you need to do, just for the mere fact that you did it.
All right, we're going to pause here for a brief timeout. And on the other side, Renee is going to talk more about copyrights and even what you need to do with teleseminars. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
In the best-selling book, No BS Direct Marketing, legendary marketer Dan Kennedy said this: "My single biggest recommendation is the use of a monthly customer newsletter. Nothing, and I mean nothing, maintains your fence better." Dan is absolutely correct. The truth is, for just about any business owner, the greatest potential for new business and higher profits lies within its current customer base. Stronger customer relationships yield higher sales and more profits, and a monthly newsletter is the best relationship-building tool, bar none. Unfortunately, for many entrepreneurs, the struggle of producing a newsletter every month is too much, and it just doesn't get done. But no longer. Every month, No Hassle Newsletters members get 24 pages of Jim's famous customer-loving content and his amazing ready-to-go newsletter templates. Your company's No Hassle Newsletter will generate more repeat and referral business in less than 1 hour per month. Join the hundreds of entrepreneurs already using No Hassle Newsletters at www.nohasslenewsletters.com. That's www.nohasslenewsletters.com.
All right, we're back. Let's get right back into our interview with patent attorney Rene Duff.
That is copyright protected, you're saying. There's nothing else you need to do, just for the mere fact that you did it.
Well, yes. And then there's, again, there's the additional step that should be taken, depending on what the, what the purpose is of what you're doing. But the Copyright Office, the U.S. Copyright Office, provides for registration of a copyright as well. And what happens there is by registering with the Copyright Office, again, you're getting additional rights that you don't have just by the sake of being the copyright holder without the registration. And the biggest one of those is that if you ever had to defend that copyright, you cannot actually get into federal court and even bring a case unless you have a registration with the U.S. Copyright Office. So, and copyright protection is relatively simple and quicker than trademark protection. But, the other thing that by filing your copyright with the Copyright Office, what you're doing is you are giving yourself access to mostly damages issues that, believe me, if you ever have to deal with a copyright infringement claim, you really want those added protections, because it has to do with how much money you can get back for the infringement.
Hmm. What about, Renee, people that do teleseminars or even calls like we're doing now, where people are being interviewed, or a teleseminar where it's just you presenting information for an hour or something? Is that something that's copyright protected, or do you need to, because that's kind of, I guess, well, I'll make a CD and I'll do a transcript for my clients, but suppose somebody just does it and it's kind of out there over the phone lines or whatever. Is that something that's in any way protected?
If it's fixed, that goes to, the same issue applies with live performances, like live musical performances. The live performance, there's really no way to protect that. The only way that can be protected is if you record it. So it's kind of this weird little space in the copyright law.
So if you're doing a teleseminar or a call like I'm doing now, if it's recorded, obviously that you're saying now it's being fixed. It's either fixed to the hard drive, it'll be fixed to a CD or to a printed transcript, that then becomes copyright protected.
Exactly.
Okay. I think I understand that. Okay, what about patents?
Patents are basically, when you think of patents, you think of inventions, and, they can be very practical type things, machinery or very scientific things. Pharmaceutical products fall into the patentable category. So when you're talking about patents, but actually there's also another area that now, which is a little bit under debate, but you can, it's called a business method patent, where it's the process of the way you do something that makes it unique to what you do. When you're dealing with patents, what you're doing is you're being granted a monopoly for a limited time to sell that product, and you may or may not sell it under a brand, so that trademark can interweave here, and a lot of intellectual property is, it does happen in layers, but so you're given that monopoly for whatever amount of time, depending on the type of patent that you apply for, to sell your product. But then, in exchange for that, what you're doing is you, after that patent time period expires, you have to make all of this information available to the general public so that anyone and everyone could come in and make your product or try to improve on your product or do whatever it is. So that's why, you know, drug companies get, they spend millions or billions of dollars developing their products. And that, you know, and the reason they can do that is because they're granted a monopoly in the sale of that particular product for X amount of years. But then once it's off patent, then all of a sudden it becomes available to anyone, and that's, you know, generic drugs and things like that can come out. So it's an interesting...
What time frame is that generally?
It's 14 years or 20 years, depending on the patent.
Okay. So you got to make
it's
your...
It's a significant amount of time. It's enough time for you to, you know, make money off of your patent. But, you know, that's where, so the thing with patents and, you know, what people have to realize is that there are, I believe over 3 million. I think I may be getting that confused with, the trademark numbers right now, but there are millions of issued patents. That doesn't mean that there's millions of products that are, you know, actually out there being produced. Because, as you know, it's one thing to create a product. It's a whole other thing to actually be able to market and sell it successfully. So.
Right. Hmm. I'm guessing, is not going to apply to a lot of people on the call, but that's certainly understand that. That's certainly where you have a product or some kind of patented way. Of actually doing something. I guess most people would think of manufacturing and things like that. So, what about licensing, Renee? What's that about?
Licensing is basically, again, it's if you have any type of intellectual property. So whether you have a trademark, you have a copyright, or you have a patent, what that does is it allows you to give somebody else the right to use that trademark, copyright, or patent. You know, based licensing is all based on contract. So it's a contractual arrangement between the intellectual property owner and the person who wants to use it for whatever purpose. When you do license something, licensing agreements, you know, there's certain standard clauses that must be in licensing agreements in order for them to be valid. And the biggest one is that you have to have some type of control over the usage of your marks, so, or your mark or your copyright or your patent. So this way, you can't just have people going out there and, you know, using it however they want. It has to be used consistently, and all of that has to be agreed upon. But licensing, you know, can be very lucrative if, you know, particularly if you have some type of copyright materials. You know, if you're an artist, again, that's where a lot of times, you know, you have paintings, you have various things that you can turn into all sorts of products, and you don't necessarily want to make them yourself, but you want to give somebody else the right to do that, and then you'll take a licensing fee and or a royalty.
Okay. I know that I have clients that are coaches. I have clients that are in real estate, or somebody may have a systemized way to buy and sell properties and things like that. Is that something that can be licensed, you know, or does it need to be a very specific? You could license anything, right? I mean, you could just say this is the way we do it, and
exactly. And again, you know, the thing, you know, when you're talking about licensing, if it's a simple, you know, I'm going to let you use my name and my process, then, and you're going to go off and do what you do, and you're going to pay me a licensing fee, and or you might take, you know, a percentage of the sales. That's, you know, it can work out great for people. The thing you do need to keep in mind, and, you know, this is where, again, you should probably speak with a qualified IP attorney, is that you don't want to start getting into the possibility of a franchise.
Right.
Because franchises have all sorts of laws, and you know, each state has specific regulations of what you can and can't do if you're actually deemed to be operating as a franchise. But you know, a franchise is another way to to use your intellectual property, though, too. So it's just, you know, it's just another option available to you.
Do you want to tell us about your business and how people can get in touch with you?
The best way to reach me, though, is you can email me. The email address is rduff, R-D-U-F-F, at rldpc.com.
I hope you enjoyed this very special interview and episode of Stick Like Glue Radio with Renee Duff. Stick Like Glue Radio is the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. All great things for your business. I am your host, Jim Palmer, and I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. Watch for another great episode of Stick Like Glue Radio next week, and until then, keep taking action, keep moving forward, and never, ever, ever give up. Now go out there and do something nice for somebody today. You take care, everybody.
You've been listening to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Stick Like Glue Radio features Jim Palmer's unique brand of smart marketing and business building advice for action-oriented entrepreneurs. To make sure you don't miss a single profit-boosting show, subscribe to this podcast at www.getjimpalmer.com. If you know other entrepreneurs looking for the fastest way to higher profits in their business, please tell them about the Stick Like Glue Radio podcast. Now go and implement what you've learned and boost your profits. See you next week for more Stick Like Glue Radio.